Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the delegation oversight session. I would like to first introduce Paula Gumpfer, who is a clinical compliance manager for Anthem. Paula's experience includes over 28 years of experience working in healthcare, 16 years of it in Medicare and Medicaid managed care. Paula's compliance concentration includes UM, claims, and the delegation oversight. But welcome, Paula. Next, I would also like to introduce Dorothy DeAngelis. Have I pronounced that correctly? Dorothy DeAngelis is a senior managing director at Ancora. Is that correct?
That's
all right. Based in Phoenix. Her expertise is in healthcare compliance, operations, investigations, and disputes. And Dorothy provides consulting services relating to regulatory compliance. Welcome, Dorothy.
Thank you.
And
Thank
I will you. Hand it over to you.
Thank you. Okay. Great. Yeah, I'm just going to kick us off quickly and give just a brief introduction outside of what she just mentioned. I'm going to try to walk through this and kind of use a lens that I've been spending a lot of time in, which is UM investigations, quality investigations and audits, helping plans and providers over the last several years and throughout my career. Paula, did you want to add anything on to that?
No, I just want to let everybody know. My main focus recently, or I'm a lead for ODAG and CERAG, so my concentration is on basically for Medicare audit preps for program audits. So, you know, I'm the person that requests monthly universes and conducts mock audits. So that's where my main concentration has been of late.
Great. And we didn't do the live polling, so I'll do an actual alive polling just see if everyone's alive and with me. It's 4 o'clock or after. How many of you are from health plans in the group? Good showing. Thank you. How about providers? MSOs? Okay. Government? Okay. Okay, there was one. Okay. I'm going to say, wait a minute. Just kidding. We're all here to collaborate and help. And then any others, just random. Okay, I think I've got it. What I'm also going to try to do is I understand two things that I've learned over my career. One is do not stand between a group and a cocktail hour. Move your session along. So I fully intend to do it. And certainly do not defraud the federal government. I've seen both things happen, and neither one goes well. So we're going to talk about the downside of some of this stuff when it goes awry. But what Paul and I are going to try to do is talk you through how you might want to re-examine your delegation oversight programs in light of some of the enforcement and regulatory activity that has occurred over the last several years. We talked through some of the challenges of this. I mean, this is definitely not easy with multiple lines of business and multiple audit tools. But there are some things you can do to make life a little bit easier, especially with doing more with less. If you were at the last session, you heard Paula say that, and it's absolutely true. It's not as though, you know, as the legislative activity continues and as enforcement continues, you're getting new staff on its face. So definitely ways that we can talk through being smarter with the audits. And a lot of that is going to come down to data analytics. So we're going to talk about balancing needs, again, for these multiple lines of business, you know, whether it's DMHC and their tags or DHCS, CMS, you know, everyone has their own sort of lens for this and audit guides. They all go into differing levels of detail. And at certain times, and NCQA, of course, weighing in, at certain times, there are conflicts. And, you know, one may say something or look for a thing, something that someone else does not. You know, if you are a group, a large medical group, and you're processing hundreds of thousands of cases, you know, for all of these members, you need to be aware and take all of that into account. So this is definitely not easy. The level of detail is also, I think, important in terms of, you know, how deeply do you go to get to the bottom of root causes. That's something CMS always, you know, has looked for in the last several years, digging deeply enough. And then, you know, we want to also make sure we're speaking to different levels of the challenge here between payers and providers and hear about that, and then talk through tools because one size does not fit all. But Paula is going to try to show you something from a data validation perspective that might be very helpful. In terms of definitions, I know just I can tell by the folks in this room that everyone knows what delegation is. There are a few different definitions, and you know, one of the first ones that I started working with and thinking about was from the Office of the Inspector General, where it's really the delegation of discretionary authority. So if you're giving that authority to someone to make decisions, let's say for UM, prior auth, claims, there's lots of examples, but you still retain that ultimate responsibility, and that's something we've definitely heard a number of times from the government at past conferences and, you know, even at this one alike. But this is the NCQA 2020 definition, just to sort of ground everyone. And then the next one is the part of the alphabet soup of an FDR. This is coming from CMS, and when they put forward their chapters 9 and 21, sub-regulatory guidance, they really went into more detail. This chart is from that one of those manuals, but it shows that it's the written agreement, again, to delegate some sort of important, you know, substantive type of work to another, but it's a written agreement that needs to contain certain elements, and then that's at the first tier. And then you have various downstream, and the related entities are really, I think, going to, you know, become in vogue again. I think they always were, but with all the merger mania, you know, we're seeing relationships changing, and we've always recommended in my practice that plans that have related entities oversee them the same way, even at arm's length, even as though they were not your ownership and control partners. Paul, did you want to add to this? You live in this world.
Yeah. So I just, you know, again, an FDR, a related entity, you're an extension of the health plan. It's very important that, you know, you're following what the health plan is doing, you know, because failing failing any type of element can be passed down to a delegated arrangement based on contract arrangements, and I think contracts are starting to go that way as far as, you know, again, you know, just because you are an extension, if you are a delegate or a PMG of the health plan, that, you know, if you were to, again, you know, happen to fail or do or have a negative, I guess, impact, I should say, that could go, you know, be transcended down to you. Again, that landscape is changing, and the related entity scope is changing, you know, as far as, you know, we're getting, you know, you heard earlier today, we're getting into meals, getting into housing, you know, bug vendors, exterminations, yeah. Bug, sorry. So, you know, that's, you know, again, this there's a whole level of essential benefits that's being added, and I think that's going to be a growing delegation arrangement across the board, so...
Absolutely. It just, you know, to continue on with regard to the challenges, you know, for the plan, since we do have a preponderance of plans here in the audience, and you, as a large national plan, you might have hundreds, and literally you have to do all of these audits, you know, on an ongoing basis. I think that in and of itself presents a challenge, as does the environment here in California, being very regulatorily complex. The legislature is extremely active, which we've heard about. And again, it's not a situation where you're necessarily getting more resources. So what I've seen sort of fall out from that is that oftentimes the audits over the years have taken on an approach where they might rely a little bit more heavily on documentation, so policies and procedures, which are important. But I think if you look at what CMS has done over the last several years, it's more of a risk-based, outcomes-driven, data analytic-heavy backdrop for the audit process, and I think that's something that we're going to continue to see. I also think moving away from random sampling, you know, I'm going to talk through, and we're going to use a number of examples, random versus targeting. CMS has always, you know, been choosing the targeted approach. If you're dealing with a different type of audit where perhaps they're looking for overpayments, random sampling makes sense, statistical validity makes sense, but what we're talking about here is much more of a qualitative audit. You know, did something occur or did it not? Was it documented correctly or not? So different approaches can be utilized. And then, you know, what does that look like at the end of the day in terms of how your tools may be evolving? Anything you would add there, Paul?
The work that I do, we're always looking to better, or, you know, the relationship, we're always, it's a very collaborative relationship, and we're always looking to, like, when we're doing these mock audits and we're validating these universes and we're preparing, always trying to be prepared for any type of audit. Again, it's not to say, oh, you know, shame on you, you did this or you did that. It's more about just, again, identifying, it's the transparency, it's the, you know, we want to work with you, you know, and, again, identify something if it's on the front end, if it's a systemic problem, so that we can identify it, we can work through it, and move on. And, I think that's, again, we're having to do a whole lot more with a whole lot less. So that's
great. Very true. And then just in terms of, I wanted to give some backdrop in terms of the environment, so sort of what's behind the name of the session in this heightened era of scrutiny. If you've looked at the headlines at all in the last couple of years, you know, California, for example, it's been very quiet. Not much has happened. Just kidding. If you compare that to a tsunami or something, maybe so. But, these are just some cases that are ripped right from the headlines. And so these are based on public information. I'm going to talk about a few of them if you're not familiar. But the first one was the CinerMed case in 2017, and this really kind of set everything on its ear and called into question how audits are being done, what types of information are plans receiving from ASOs and groups, and can they really rely on it? How many of you are familiar with that case and that situation? Okay, good. That's a good thing. It's the first step. And, the other one that I think is very interesting was Aetna, and this was a front page story as well, where a medical director had testified that they had not reviewed any medical records in making denials. And, you know, whether or not you look at that and say that was out of context in terms of what he said, it still called into question and set off sort of a whole wave of issues in terms of how are decisions made, how are they documented, and what are the appropriate levels of professionals who are doing that. But then the other one, also in California, was called the Agilon example. Agilon, again, an ASO, MSO type of situation where a nurse in the prior auth area was a whistleblower. And when I say that, I don't mean under the Federal False Claims Act or even a state False Claims Act. This is a situation where the whistleblowers, both cases, CinerMed and here, felt internally they didn't have anywhere to go, which is often the case of what we see in that situation. So it really called into play the culture of compliance, you know, at organizations. And I know that was one of the sessions here, which is critical, making sure that you have all of the 7 required elements. But what is the overarching and underpinning culture of compliance that is either supporting or not supporting, you know, making the right decisions on an ongoing basis? So all of these things, I think, were called into question here. Since you're familiar with CinerMed, I won't belabor this one, but again, I would call out here what was interesting in that, you know, as the confidential letter was sent to regulators, they asked for the plans to investigate the delegates. And so one of the things that, you know, Paul and I started talking about earlier is that this is the way it is because the plan is always accountable. And so what are you doing on an ongoing basis to make sure that you are looking for these issues and can present your case for how you have overseen the delegate if a situation like this arises?
Yes. And we'll be going, like, again, I'll be showing some tools that will hopefully help you guys do some additional oversight, downstream, at least, you know, as far as a provider medical group or a vendor, you know, health plans. I know that you all probably have your own programs, but again, trying to help make things a little more efficient for the downstream delegate or the FDR and give you the tools that you might need or, you know, that might help.
Yep. And then also just the method of the audit itself. I mean, CMS for a long time has used the live audit method as opposed to sort of a desk approach and taking PDFs. So in CinerMed, you know, there were PDFs of denial letters kind of made to match, tailor-made to match screenshots in the system so that decisions aligned and dates aligned. And, yeah, I think we're going to talk through how all of that is really changing. Well, one of the first things that you can do as we kind of shift gears and talk about reconsidering how you're doing things is who's on the team to do these audits, both at the plan from that level and also from the delegates level? Do you have the right individuals at the table? Oftentimes, it's operational oversight leads for an area, whether it's organization determinations or appeals, grievances. But I really strongly encourage you, if you haven't already, to take your data analytics professionals out to lunch, because they are the most important partners that you will have, or probably already do have, in this battle. And really, so much has to happen before you even get to the point of doing your audit and selecting your cases, because they can help you with all of that targeting. I think also kindred spirits and partners to use wisely in these audits would be someone from the Special Investigations Unit, if you're fortunate enough to have one, and also, or you're required, but if you have a good one, and also internal audit, helping you with sort of that independent arm, if you will, and also certainly outside agencies. Any considerations there on the team?
Yeah, just again, you know, creating oversight, internal oversight, because especially at the PMG delegate level, it's very important that you're looking at the controls and you're monitoring the controls, because when it comes over to the health plan looks at it, and then we may see variances and things of that nature, then it's going back to you, you know, again, and you should really have the pulse of what's going on within the organization. So, you know, again, I think to the point of this breakout session is to hopefully give some tools that will help the provider medical groups gain some efficiencies there.
Okay. And that brings us to the importance of the data analytics professionals, and Paula's going to go into this.
So what I have up on the screen is we created some validators because, again, a little history about myself as well. Because I'm in the CMS Medicare compliance realm, again, a lot of downstream delegates, they might not have the infrastructure to do data analytics, or they might not have the expertise to take a universe and take it from upper and lower case and put it all into capital letters, you know, to follow all of the CMS formatting template requirements. So we created a validator, and it's just a macro, basically. But so how it works is that, so here is, like, this is an SOD universe, and it's based on the actual CMS specifications. So you would copy the entire universe, and I just want to show a quick little tip. You know, I don't know that everybody knows this, but, like, if you were to take your universe, and I'm just going to act like this is the top line, and you highlight the first or second rows, and if you do control shift down, and of course now it's not going to work, it'll select all of your data within that selection where it's not running down the entire spreadsheet. So anyways, you drop the data into, you would then come in and you would copy and paste into this. Can everybody see? Because I might not be, there's one over there, so just want to make sure. So you drop it into this validator, and you would put in the parameters of the month that you're validating. You have to go in a certain sequential order. So first, what you do is you would change. You would have the universe. You would change the text. So right now, you'll start to see it in a minute, hopefully. And it takes just a minute. You'll start to see it flip through the macro, and you'll see where it's changing again. The upper and lowers into to all caps. You'll see that the authorization number, it's basically an invalid number right here. It'll change it then to a text, you know, a valid text authorization number. And again, it's only as good as the data that you have. So, and I'm going to show you the validation piece where it'll kick over, where it will go into the actual validation piece of it. Not only does it do changing it to text, but then it, okay, so see, did we complete? So as you can see, now it's changed everything. So now I'm going to validate the universe. And this will take another minute. And then when I slide over, you'll see, because we have it set up to where it's looking at each one of the character, each one of the defined characteristics of the actual CMS template, And so it would show you if there's a variance. It's going to show you if there's a sequence error, you know, decision before, receive date. We've been seeing a lot of lately where the written is before the oral. It's because they're either they're sending out the written notification, but they're continually trying to reach out to the member to get a hold of them. That used to be considered a true sequence error, but I think because of the way the landscape has changed, that might not be the, it should not be the case anymore. Yes.
Do you have a claims book in there too, and which ICE site can we find this on?
So this isn't posted to ICE just yet. So this isn't posted to ICE yet, and I think that probably I'll need to get some form of approval to have it actually posted to ICE. But again hoping to get it posted shortly.
Okay. We'll help you with
that. Thank you. Oh, okay. Yeah. And again, that's the whole point of this portion is because we just feel like this would really help provider groups, delegates, because again, there's all this back and forth because we get the information. We've created a robust validation process where we're then kicking it back to you, you're kicking it back to us, we're kicking it back to you. So we're hoping that giving you the tools in the front end will help everybody. There has been talk about combining Part C and ODAG together, but I think last year it actually came up. But there's still variations that couldn't be, you couldn't combine it together because Part C was still asking for additional elements compared to the actual ODAG. This is only supposed to be used as a tool, like for your own internal tools. I know that there are health plans that do have another formatting or another validation piece that might be attached to their universe. But again, this is only intended to be used as a tool and to help groups, just validate and because you can get a lot of information from this, and that's why we've continued to do the monthly mock audits as a best practice, because we're now seeing more real time if there is a problem or, there is a systemic problem, we're able to identify it on the front end and take care of it so that we're not going through a program audit and finding out about it, or it's another year and you're like, when did that change, and things of that nature. So as you'll see up at the top, like if an extension was taken, up at the very top here, it will tell you how many, if there's any errors, and what you can do is you would then come down to the filter, and you would see what the error was. Like this one is, if an extension was taken, did the sponsor notify the member? And that's because over here it was saying that an extension was taken, but then they populated it with an NA. So, and if it, if an extension was taken, it would have to be yes or no, because you either notified the member or you didn't notify the member. So that NA is not an applicable output for that particular element. I'm going to do the EOD real quick, just so that, because I have more variances in there. And let me just check the time. I think we're doing okay. Oh, I'm jumping all over. So again, just changing to text, and I just wanted you guys to be able to have the visual of what it actually, what it does. And again, like this particular EOD, I added more variances so that you could see. All right, so see here on the EOD, you'll see that we've got a lot of, we got the oral turnaround time. We've got all the decision turnaround time, documented in here. If there was a written, oral versus written. This right here, again, is the format check. Then you come down into here,
And they're both set up this way where you have the format check first, and then you go into the sequencing errors and looking at things. Like, so this one, so there's two sequencing errors for the data decision. So on this one, the data decision, there's a sequence error because it was received on 9-4, but the decision was made on 9-2. So it's, you know, calling it out. And so, you know, you do have to do, you know, like some researching. It's going to tell you that there's an error, but then you got to kind of look and just identify what that is. And it shows that there's a negative turnaround time. Again, I know that one thing that... never mind. That's just lost where I was. All right. So, do you guys do you feel that this would be helpful?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I think so. Honestly. Yeah, well, and I didn't go into, because again, and I apologize because as far as it was in the UM world, you know, I was in the UM prior to this, you know, where we were doing Part C in the UM work plan. So I was really focusing on UM because I thought that was going to be the audience, but I do have that information. So again, there's several different sequencing checks. Again, like if you were to, I thought I entered one in here, like where the effectuation date, like where you, if it's a denial and they put it in an effectuation date, you know, it's supposed to be NA in the universe. Again, it will error that out. It'll show that's an error as well. So that's just thought you guys might enjoy a little tutorial, I guess. So anybody that would, you know, once we get approval, hopefully we can have it posted to ICE. If not, if you want to come up after the class and just put your name and email on this notebook or notepad, just so that we make sure that everybody does get it again, since there's a much bigger group than who I'm used to working with as far as the UM Requires Reports team. So just know that, come up here and fill that out. And now we're going to see if I can switch it back. Here he comes.
Here we go. So it's either going to blow up or
wait,
it's going to go well.
As long as it's not touching.
We've got our safety net here.
Back up just really quick and then just go right back in.
Thank you so much, superstar. Okay. I'm going to talk through, evolving the approach. And as we've gone through this, one thing that I want to talk about is what types of data are you looking at? What types of dispositions of the cases? So, again, if we're sticking with the lens of UM, you know, approved, denied in California, modify, delay, defer, what about cancels? You know, do any of you look at those? And one of the other things that I think we've found a lot of fuel, I guess, for looking at things has been to ask simply, you know, what are some of the valid reasons or dispositions that you have of cases in a system, whether it's facets or homegrown, as so many of them are, and looking at all of the potentially valid things that are in there for the organization and picking some of those in our sample selections as well. Things that say, you know, don't look at me, I'm flashing status, and I, you know, please don't look here. Of course we're going to look there. But I have seen some, and, you know, we've been picking on California because it's a complex environment, but I spend a lot of time in South Florida, again, heavily managed, heavily delegated risk environment, where we've seen statuses that say something like decision not made. Well, what does that mean? I mean, you can't just stay there forever, right? So, you know, we've sampled those cases as well. So you have three things, I think, to focus on. Look at all of the different transaction types. You may not need to do this for every delegate that you have, But when we start talking about risk assessment, and if there are some that just you're continuing to have caps, you're continuing to have repeating issues, it may warrant a little bit of a deeper look, which brings us to our next point, which I think you're going to hear more of from regulators. I've got an example from NCQA 2020 where they want to see information about system controls. Who can have access to certain fields, be they the all-important date fields, notification fields, you know, like Paula was just walking us through, and why do they have that access and who's made different changes. So that's going to be another, I think, key focal area. And then the third thing is really, again, focusing on that culture of compliance. If you are, you know, getting the compliance program, great. The attestation's important. But for certain delegates, there may be a reason to go a little bit deeper and look into things further. In terms of recommended approaches and where to even begin with this, and one thing I wanted to ask, you know, you get so much information. We sit in the sessions and we hear about all the different tools and templates. There's encounter data. You know, there's just so much that is collected. One of the things I think CMS has done, like it or not, very well, is take all the information that plans report on an ongoing basis and utilize that to study an array on some sort of radar to determine who they're going to look at. So how many of you do something like that for your delegates where you're kind of taking all that information and we need that cocktail hour, right? It's coming, I promise. But, I mean, just think about it because you do have a great array of information to look at. And one of the things that we like to do, I'll often start out with asking for a distribution. How does a delegate stack up? You know, maybe they have a cancellation, which really should be a very small number of dispositions or cases, right? These are just supposed to be mistakes, duplicates, not even really duplicates, you know, just true mistakes. So if you're making more than, you know, 10, 12% of mistakes, that's too many, and something might be going on. You need to dig further if you have some other odd status. So how do they look on a radar screen? If you have a particular delegate that has a low appeal rate, well, that may be great because they're really confident in their initial decisions. It could also mean they're not issuing denial letters. So you can always look at things from a different perspective if you use what you have. And the other thing that I wanted to mention was, you know, we're looking at sometimes very complex issues that are arising, as we've seen in the headlines. Things like in California, the economic profiling issues, you know, that you can run afoul. So you need to think about looking at things not only from the universe data that you have, but you may need to ask certain delegates for what I call a special run or a data universe that might allow you to see more deeply. You know, one of the things that happens with the Part C universes, for example, is that you're really looking at the last disposition of something. So if someone touched that UM decision 12 times, you're getting the last time. You may not see what happened in between. There may be times when you want to see that, and you want to, you know, analyze that information. So that's something else to consider here. The other thing that, and I'm very fortunate to have a great data analytics professional and team, and she's actually here. I won't mention her by name, but she loves to use non-structured data. The messier the data, the better, and it's a great thing because oftentimes we're looking at call notes, call log, call information. We might look at medical notes, so the nurse's notes, the physician notes, and see whether or not you know, the physician is not really adding much. He's just kind of taking what the nurse said, and that's it. Depending on who's looking at that can be problematic, and you want to make sure that he or she is doing a thorough med necessity review if they're going to make this denial. So all of these are things that you can consider doing as you think about maybe changes in approach. One other thing that I wanted to talk through is this concept of targeted versus random. And you know, if we're thinking about it, there's really about four different things that you're looking for when you're auditing. You're looking at the status of a case. How is it categorized? You may want to drill into different lines of business differently. And, you know, if one line of business is being treated differently on an ongoing basis than others, that might be an issue. And you need to understand what's going on there. As I mentioned earlier, you know, looking at the canceled cases or sort of the forgotten cases that don't always make it into a final universe. And then how is the decision-making occurring? You know, one of the things that the Department of Managed Care mentioned this morning is sub-delegation. You know, they're going to focus on delegation oversight. They realize that, you know, there's an issue with sub-delegation, and that is true. And it's not always apparent. You know, things like imaging, there was mention about, well, some mention there should be about pharmacy decision-making, and so, you know, whether it's physician-administered or whatever the case may be, maybe pulling some of those cases. And then, as I said before, you know, looking at the access, who has access to different decision-making fields and abilities within the organization. And then how do you document what you made as a decision? And one of the things that I often see is that I want to make sure that, as I said before, you know, the physician has independence and they're able to make that final call on a denial and not rely so heavily on only the nurse's information and certainly on the right criteria and not just be rubber stamping something. And then how is it communicated? The communications kind of leading up to the decision are important as well. How is that documented? Things like verbal approvals, verbal denials, even back and forth, you know, between, let's say, an MSO and a group. What did the provider request? What did they actually receive? Was there any interference or back and forth? Or did they pretty much take in the request and then process it? So there's different things we can look at there in communication. And then the ultimate important communication is back with the provider and the member on the case and using the right letter and making sure that it's in the correct language for the beneficiary or the member. So anything there on the targeted versus random? You use targeted in your work.
We use target because we just want to make sure, you know, if there's a problem, we want to identify it. You don't want to be caught, you know, by surprise in an audit. So, again, it's just making everybody better, you know, that us as the health plan, you as a delegate. I think to some of the points that you've spoken to, too, again, those audit trails are extremely, extremely important. You need to have documentation to support how your audit trails work, who are the people that are, you know, there should only be a very select few that can go in and change a decision or change, you know, if there's a reason that something needs to be changed, there, again, should only be a select few that can do that. And document, make sure it is that whole story is told as to why somebody went in there and changed anything and have that supporting documentation available. Because if that's pulled into an audit, you'll want to have that.
Yep. And then cutting to the chase, NCQA has come out with their new standards here for your UM and appeal systems. And looking at data controls, exactly as we said, you know, defining the receipt dates, what is your policy and procedure around that, what is your actual process, the all-important audit trails, logs of modifications. You know, we want to understand who is making these modifications or requests for modification of the system, and is it every time there was an audit and potentially it was problematic, or is it more ongoing in terms of a dialogue with IT? So we want to, you know, understand that. And I think the fact that NCQA has this, they're going to take it to a certain level, but I think regulators will also be looking at this and how it's monitored as well. So with that, you know, as I said before, there's no one-size-fits-all category here, but hopefully this gives you some food for thought discussion and reevaluation of the programs, looking more at the outcomes and the resolution. As Paula said, I mean, the all important thing is really the resolution of issues. You know, if you're seeing things over and over, you know, with plans, with providers or delegates, and things are not resolving, the issue is collaborating and talking about that so that you can try to bring them to resolution. And in the new environment, as I said, I think culture, you know, will eat everything else for lunch. So you want to make sure that you're having organizations that you're doing business with that have the right culture of compliance.
I completely agree. And, you know, again, the delegates are the extension of the health plan. So we all need to be in compliance. And we all need to make sure that the number one thing is that our members are taken care of, you know. We do all this validation and making sure that the right thing is being done. And again, you know, the audits, the landscape has changed. The audits are becoming more targeted. And again, they're looking for outcomes. They want to make sure the members are taken care of. In the old days, it was check the box. It was here's the PDF. And a group could make it as pretty as they had, you know, 6 weeks to get that package together and present it to CMS. And so it's just a different world. And we just, again, want to make sure that we're doing the best thing for our members and making sure that we have integrity and compliance.
Okay. And with that, we have some time for questions. If there are any questions, concerns, you just want to run screaming. Yeah. So. Giving that option. Just
I know.
Case.
Go Yvonne. Yeah. I know
Yvonne. I just want to throw this out here for some feedback from the plan people that are in here regarding the live audits. I now have two plans. Okay, let me back up. In the past, this last year, most of my audits have been desk audits where I do send in PDF packets. I will tell you that out of the 13 plans that we contract with, only three did live audits. So I'm trying to get a sense of whether all plans will be going to live WebEx audits in 2020. What's your feeling, and do you have a projection on that?
Well, I think we could probably poll the room. I just know that the live WebEx audits, you see more. You can see, you know, it's not
oh,
just,
I agree.
You know, yeah. Like you identify, it's just like a program audit, you know, where all of a sudden you can go down, you're going to make a wide right because you just saw something in that file. So I don't know. So our can
let
we
me tell you what the issue is. The issue is when I prepare packets and send them out, I don't have to on my schedule because I'm the one that does it. I don't have to sit there for 8 hours on a WebEx with an auditor and go through the live system. And it does take about that long. Usually they do it in 2 4-hour sessions. If you're going to look at 100 files, that's what it takes. If you have, you know, 3 or 4 lines of business and they're going to do, you know, 40 files for each line of business and for each IPA, that's how long it takes, especially when they're going through every single document live. So when I schedule my audits, I've tried to do one a month. That doesn't work for me anymore because most plans are doing more than an annual now. So I'm just trying to get a sense. I don't know, does anyone in the room from other plans have any feedback?
So does anybody in the room, will you guys be, or how many, I guess, will be are looking to move towards WebExes? So five. So of these five, Yvonne, I don't know if these five, there might be a couple. Are you two together, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. So it looks like a handful. I know that, you know, for our organization, at least on the Medicare side, we are working to, when we're doing the monthly mock audit, we're working to incorporate that so that there's not that duplicate effort. It'll be used towards your annual audit so that the burden, you know, it decreases the duplicative efforts and potential burden. So I don't know. I'm putting that out there for other plans that if you do a monthly audit. Yes.
Hi. Oh. Yolanda Morris with St. Joseph Heritage. I'm from a provider organization, and I was just going to say that we have seen an increase with a lot of our delegated plans increasing with the virtual audits, and they're also adding this as part of the annual audit. So they're doing a sample size with the PDF files where we go through the selection and have to submit those weeks prior to the actual on-site audit, and then the day of the audit, we're notified of selection. So we are given selections on the spot, and just like you said, it takes a couple of hours. So I would say it's roughly a percentage of whatever the total amount of files for each section. So they're also doing this on the claim side, so we have seen an increase. So I would definitely recommend looking at your staffing numbers, because this is an area that I've had to increase my staff to definitely support this and ensure that throughout the year that we're looking at everything that Paula was just saying.
One thing I would add to maybe consider is if a plan is doing targeting, though, do you really need to look at 100 approvals, you know, or 100? I mean, that's one part of it. The other thing is, you know, as a group, you may be able to say, or the delegate may be able to say, if we provide additional information, so for example, going back to my concept of the specialized data run, if I can get what I need, then I may not need you on the phone for 4 hours, 8 hours. I mean, at some point it does become a drain from that perspective. So it comes down to the methodology too, which is why that's so important in terms of what's being used. Yes?
This is just more of a wish, you know, from a provider lens. You know, I have 12, and we set up, and I'm fine. I do live on. It's great because it gives you the true source of truth, right? But I think, you know, for us, the problem is that it's very difficult with, you know, 10 different commercial plans and 4 different AMA plans. There is that level of subjectivity. There's that, from a provider side, we want to be transparent, but the nuanced differences amongst each of the commercial versus MA plans will kill us. You know, right. I was at ICE back in 2009, and I thought we were getting to greater cohesion. Mm-hmm. And if anything, I see more silos.
We have one question in the back. Please state your name.
Hi, Sabrina Coleman from LA Care. And this is not a question. This is actually a response to the live audit rollout for 2020. So I can say from the plan perspective, we are evolving the way we do delegation oversight. And what we're going to do for 2020 is look at the data from 2019 to see how each of our delegates have performed and assess risk levels and then roll out live audits over time. We're not going to just unnecessarily or unduly burden all of our provider groups initially, but we're going to test it out throughout 2020, perfect the process, and then roll it out for the rest of our groups.
That's great. That makes so much sense. And, you know, like I said, you know, take the data that you already have and do something positive with it to evaluate. That's great. Thank you,
right.
Melly Care, for that.
Creating a risk score, because I know that, that's something else that looking into.
We have a question.
Sure. Oh, yes.
That's okay. Hi, I'm Cam from United Healthcare. Mike mentioned it this morning in his opening remarks about a standardized assessment tool across all health plans and that there is some interest again. So maybe this is not necessarily a question, but just kind of some feedback again. I'm sure delegates would love it, but I didn't know as far as health plans what the thoughts are there.
Well, for me, I think that, you know, I think we all should come to the table and have that discussion because I think, you know, again, we're having to do so much more with so much less, and the regulatory burdens have just increased exponentially. So if we were able to do that, I think it would help everybody. I think it would be, you know, how does that look? You know, maybe it's just the policy and procedure piece. And so, and then, you know, the file review piece, you know, depending on contract language and things of that nature. But I think 2020, we should really, everybody needs to join the ICE. Or, you know, hopefully there'll be a community. Yeah, so we need participation. Again, this is a collaborative effort, and we've really come a long way.
A provider group, I guess. Yeah. That wasn't my question, but absolutely yes.
A lot of research, like back in 2011 or so, they kind of started something along the lines of this.
So everybody, again, the whole purpose of ICE is to collaborate, and so, and you know, from what we're hearing, this has been started previously, so it's not like we're starting from scratch. We can find out, you know, okay, where did it end up, and you know, just take it from there and see how we can leverage that in 2020. Because again, we're all in this together. In the end.
Absolutely true. We can't, don't talk about it. We can't fix it.
Yep.
It wasn't necessarily a question, just kind of echoing what I've been hearing in the room. Just as an MSO with the 13 different plans and everyone has a different flavor of the month that they're actually auditing us for, I think it goes back to a comment that someone made in the back with regards to staffing. Just me recently being kind of somewhat promoted and demoted, depending on how you look at it when you have more areas of responsibility. Having to create, that's how I look at it, promoted and demoted, having to create subject matter experts within my UM department. So I've taken lead nurses that are clinical reviewers and basically brought them in on that mock audit process just because there's not enough of us leaders that actually do it. So you need to have someone who's going to be your skill driver as well as someone who's going to be able to talk through the system. And just having it just stay with the manager, just with the director, is just, it's not good enough anymore. So, I mean,
right.
If you have some key clinical people that really have a good understanding of your process, it's time to grow them up.
Great point.
Statement of the day, grow them up.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you all. And I, as promised, you're on time, and it's time for the reception.
All right. Thank you, guys.